Now we can talk a little bit more deeply about what you're in for in this course, which is probably going to sound discouraging, but I don't want to lie to you, and I want to make you realize right away that this is a course with a very high attrition rate. It's full right now, almost full. But regardless of who teaches, it's not just because of me. About half of the people don't make it through this course. About half end up withdrawing each term. So there'll be very easy to find a seat at the end of the term. Hopefully this will be the exceptional class, but there's never been an exceptional class, and I've taught this a lot of times. It's a demanding course. Almost certainly for almost all of you, this will be the most demanding course you've taken so far, at least, and maybe one of the most demanding ones ever. But I'm saying demanding. I'm not necessarily saying difficult. By which I mean it's not, the problem is not that the material is incomprehensible. It's not that the concepts are impossible to understand. It's just that there's a hell of a lot of information. It's a relentless course. Really important course. 181 and 182, if you take 182 as well, the most important biology courses you'll ever take, because they are fundamental courses. Fundamental does not mean easy. Basic does not mean easy. Basic means that you're learning the bases on which all of the rest of the science rests. So it's the most important stuff, and you're going to learn it over and over in different courses. But this is your first formal introduction to it. So it's really important, but there's just a lot of information. And it takes a lot of time. Being here is just a little bit of that. And there's probably other instructors who say exactly the same thing to you in other courses, and that's fine. It might even be true in other courses. But it's really important just to believe me on this and not think that I'm just trying to goad you into being a really good student. It's going to take a lot of your time. And that is that. That's why so many people end up withdrawing. Because nowadays, things are much different. Back when I was a kid, it was a person fresh out of high school, that person's job was to be a student. That's what they devoted full time to. Nowadays, those days are long gone. So people have spouses, children, jobs, all of which interfere with this course. And that's not to say those things aren't important. I understand how those three things and other things are really important. So I'm not saying that you have to neglect children or quit your job. Something has to give, though, and it's usually this course, if you don't have enough time. So expect to be very busy starting today, and hopefully it won't overwhelm you. But to make it through, you're going to have to budget your time. So it's not just about devoting time, it's about devoting time efficiently. Because you really almost certainly won't have as much time as you need to do everything perfectly. So even with the available time that you have, you need to make the most of it. Okay, so just realize that's the way things are. It's unfortunate that people are so busy nowadays, but we can't, as institutions, just dumb everything down so that the same number of people make it through. The unfortunate thing is that because people are so busy, it takes people longer to get through college because a lot of people have to repeat courses like this. Don't be discouraged, though. I know this sounds discouraging, but it is really the truth. So it also does not mean it can't be an enjoyable course. It should be an enjoyable course because this is a major's course, meaning in one way or another you're a biological science-related major. So hopefully that means you have a genuine interest in biology, and if you don't, then you shouldn't be a biology major. Do something that you like in life. That's really important. But if you really do genuinely like biology, then I think you'll like the course. It's just going to be maybe a pain in the ass. It's the kind of course where you're glad you're through it once you're done, and you can relax and think back to what you learned, but it can be a struggle to get through. All right, so before I go on, don't ever hesitate to interrupt me. You don't have to raise your hand to ask a question or just shout out anytime you need to. Let's talk about the fact that there are three websites you need to keep track of. One of which is Canvas. You should already be familiar with Canvas because all of the courses at this school use Canvas. Has anyone had any problem with Canvas so far? With getting on? You're all in, right? Almost all in. By the way, there is one waitlisted student, but I never ask whether everyone else is is everyone else registered, or is there another waitlister? Okay, cool. So Canvas is one of the websites, and there's a lot of things about Canvas I hate, but I have to use Canvas for certain things, specifically to give you your grades. It would be against the law if I just posted people's grades so that everyone could see them. It has to be a protected environment. So that's one of the reasons you'll use Canvas, but you'll also be submitting pre-labs, and like I mentioned in the lab earlier, and other kinds of assignments. So that's one of the three. This one, though, is another. And how many of you have already been here? Okay, that's cool. It's no problem if you haven't yet, but you should be visiting this often from now on. This is the so-called Hoffman site, which is on an entirely different server. So even though you can get to here from Canvas, don't do that. Not only because it's just more direct and quicker to go directly here, but you don't want to not bookmark this and go through Canvas every time, because Canvas could go down. Well, if Canvas goes down, this still exists for you as long as you have it bookmarked. So do that, bookmark this. But this is what I'll call the Hoffman site, and this is where things that don't have to be private will be here. It's not just that I don't have this website just because I don't like Canvas. It's also because you can't get to Canvas unless you're enrolled in a course. Well, you'll always have access to this Hoffman site, which if you go to the main section, this is your specific class. If you go to the main page, you'll see that I teach it a lot of different courses. And if you're in any of those courses, you don't have to be my student. You'll have access to my lectures and recordings. I mean, my recordings and slideshows for other courses if it helps you. So you'll always have this. Anyway, this is the second website. And the third is the Connect website. Now, it's also reachable through Canvas. And that's the only... Well, I mean, that there's no additional expenditure beyond the fact that you've already paid for the course. You don't have to buy anything. But you are required to register in my specific course in Connect, which is a McGraw-Hill product. So the publisher site, which I'm calling the Connect site, is the third website. Now, to make sure that is glitch-free, don't try going directly there if you're not already registered. Is there anyone already registered? Okay, cool. McGraw-Hill's pretty good with the fact that it's not problematic. It doesn't cause many problems like mastering does, for instance. But still, don't try to go directly to the publisher site if you're not yet registered. Go to Canvas, click on the McGraw-Hill Connect link, which is in the left menu of Canvas. I think I have a Canvas page up here. Yeah, this should look roughly what you see, except for the pink border, which shows that I'm in student view. Anyway, this is the menu I'm talking about. The McGraw-Hill Connect link is, if you've not registered yet, that's the first thing you should click on, and then just follow the steps. I can't show you here because this is a fake student. But you don't have to pay for it. But you do have to go through the registration steps. That will get you in the correct Connect site, which is the third website. And the reason that's important is because that's the only way you can get to the Connect assignments. You can't blow off that whole batch of Connect assignments, so you can't skip this third website. And especially, not only can you not blow them off, but the Connect assignments, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a minute, are among the easier points to get. You don't want to waste any easy-to-get points, because points will seem very precious for most of you. Okay, so those are the three websites. Now, right away, let me give you a task. I don't want to... Well, it is homework, but it's not homework that's worth any points. I just want you to do this, definitely tonight sometime, if you haven't already. For two of these sites, Canvas and the Hoffman site, I want you to... They both have a vertical menu at the left. I want you to click on each of those main menu items to see what's there and to remember what's there, because you're going to get very busy, as I said, quickly. It's best to know what is there that can help you and how things are organized before you get really busy. All right, so do that for this site sometime today, and also for your specific Hoffman site, which is this one. Click on all of these before midnight tonight. Connect, I think the first Connect assignment has an upcoming deadline. So you also, even if you don't do the assignment immediately in Connect, you should as soon as possible register so that you can be sure there isn't any problem getting registered. And then once you're registered, you can do the assignment whenever you want, as long as it's before the due date. Now, speaking of due dates, one of the most valuable parts of Canvas is the assignment schedule page, because that shows you everything that's worth points sorted by their due date and other valuable stuff like how much you're docked if you don't make the deadline and so on. So that's a valuable page. Also, while I'm on Canvas, let me just say that when you look at your grades, which is one of the major uses of Canvas, does this look like what you see as a student? Okay. It might default to being sorted by due date when you look at your grades, but I think it's much more valuable since you already have a sorted by due date assignment schedule page to change that to sorting, arranging it by name. That will force the seven numbered so-called summary and forecast scores to go to the top. Your total current score is your total current score. That's the one that you want to keep an eye on. That's how well you're doing so far. All right? That'll tell you whether you're passing or not. But these others that are numbered 2 through 7, also very important. I'm not going to go through each of these because I don't really have all that much time to spend on that, but also because they're all explicitly described already when you click on those links. Okay, so feel free to ask me any questions about them later if the description is confusing. But these are designed to really help you have a gauge where you are in the course or among the class, and specifically whether or not it's going to be possible to pass. So you want to keep an eye on specifically these ones called minimum. But read their descriptions. All of these are valuable things. All right? Force them to the top by sorting them by name. Okay, now, the syllabus I'm not printing out, and I don't demand that you print it out, but it's available on the Hoffman site. It's one of those links. And I have it up here. I don't demand that you print it out, but I do demand that you read the whole thing. And I'm not going to read the whole thing to you because you can read it. But I want to hit the highlights that most students care about on the first day. By the way, it is obvious that there are many students who don't take my advice to read the syllabus because I always get questions throughout the term that are directly answered right in the syllabus. Questions like, do we have class on this date? Well, that's right in the schedule. That's at the last page of the syllabus. So use it. It's a tool. I didn't write it just for enjoyment. Anyway, let's skip to the parts that most people care about. I talked about the course websites already. Oh, that's wrong. That's not the URL for the current Hoffman site. It's been changed. I'll change the syllabus, but it's simply my name, tycmhoffman.com. The link, though, that's in Canvas is correct, so you can get to it from Canvas. I'll just change the syllabus. I never noticed that. Okay, now, notice this glaring red text there to hopefully get your attention. That's for the rules consent form, some of which you already did that. That's also good. That's not an option. You have to submit the rules consent form to get any credit. So your total current score that I showed you in Canvas will remain zero, no matter how much work you do, if you haven't submitted this rules consent form. So get that out of the way. It's just an electronic form you have to submit from the Hoffman site. You should be doing it by following my instructions that I gave you already to click on all those main links. One of those main links is the rules consent form. All right? But if you have a zero showing up, that means you haven't submitted it yet. Now let's get to scoring, though, which is mostly what I want to talk about with the syllabus. And I already went through these laboratory-related assignments, so I won't have to talk about those again. There's a couple other categories, though. Notice, though, that I have the scoring listed with attendance and without attendance. And that's because I compute your scores every time you do something that's worth points. I compute your scores two different ways, with attendance counting and without attendance counting for points. I do it both ways because there's really good arguments for and against giving points for attendance. You know, on the one hand, you know, some instructors say, I'm never going to give students any points just for showing up because they're expected to show up by registering for the course. That's a good point, actually. It's also a good point to say that if I do give them points, I'm giving them points for something that doesn't demonstrate at all that they know anything about biology, right? Just showing up does not mean you're learning anything. So it kind of makes sense not to give you points for that reason as well. But I actually am willing to give you points because I think it's valuable to be here for the live performance, even though I always record my lectures and you can recreate this experience at home. Because at home, even though you're getting all the information, you don't have the ability to interact with me and the rest of the class. You know, when I ask questions to the class, which I do as I lecture, I like to have people try to answer those questions. You can't do that at home, or you just can't ask me directly a question. On the other hand, if you are a type of student, and these are rare, but they exist, who says, well, if he's going to record all his lectures, I don't really even need to waste my time being here. Of course, that doesn't apply to the lab. You have to be here. You have to be to the lab, or you won't be able to. You'll be withdrawn. Anyway, you could make the argument, I can just listen to these at home and get A's on the tests. That is true for a certain few number of people, and I shouldn't penalize them for not being here if they can demonstrate that they can learn well just from listening to the lectures at home. So I'm willing to do it both ways and give you whichever score ends up being greater. So I do the calculation. You don't have to worry about it. It's behind the scenes. But what you see on your total current score on Canvas is always going to be the higher of these two ways of calculating it. If I do count attendance, that means attendance is a scoring category along with the other assignments. And therefore, since they all have to add up to 100%, that means all of the assignments are going to be worth a little bit less to make room for the attendance category, right? On the other hand, if I don't use attendance, then all of the various kinds of assignments are worth a little bit more and affect your grade more. Okay, well, it's not just attendance that gets you these otherwise free points. It's punctual attendance. And this is where I'm going to have to be a hard ass about time. I mean, it's to the second. Don't try to get here right before the class starts. Class starts right at 14 o'clock. And not according to that clock, according to real official time. Time.gov, use that as your guide. That's official U.S. time. If you come in, you know, that's when I'm going to start lecturing, right at 2. If you come in a couple seconds later, you should stay because it's valuable to be here, but you'll miss that day's attendance points, meaning that you won't be allowed to sign in. So signing in is a matter of putting your name on this sheet, but from now on, this sheet will just stay here. Don't pass it around. It's the only day that you're allowed to sign this after 2 o'clock because I had to describe it first. And it's the only day I'm going to pass it around. So just legibly print your name. And that's important not only for attendance points, by the way, but it's important for not being withdrawn because it's a waitlisted course. I'm going to withdraw anyone who's not here to make room for people who are on the waitlist. All right, so that's why there are two different ways of calculating it. The lecture exams are the beefiest of the assignments. They're worth the most each. There's 5 of them, first of all. So there's 5 units. A unit is one examination's worth of material. The 5th exam is the final. That just means the last, but it's not a comprehensive final. So exam 5, which you'll take during finals week, is simply the 5th test. Only unit 5's worth of material. Not the whole term. All 5 tests are equally weighted. You can see that they're all 9% with attendance. So they add up to 45% of your final grade. Huge chunk. Unfortunately, they're also the most difficult to score well on. So they affect your grade the most, and for a lot of people, they bring the grade down the most. This is why you have to have these other comparatively easier batches of points to make up for the lecture exam scores in a lot of cases. But they're not only equally weighted, they're all identical in format. They have exactly the same number of questions, which is 50. They'll all be entirely multiple choice questions. And don't make the mistake of thinking that multiple choice tests are easier than other types of tests. They can be. It depends on how you write them. I very carefully write my questions because I care a lot about language, but also just to avoid ambiguity. It is true that a multiple choice test at least allows you to guess. If you have no idea, you could just randomly get the answer correct compared to an essay, for instance. But the way I make my questions, to get it right reliably, you're going to have to know your stuff. Which, in a multiple choice test or question, it's just as important to eliminate incorrect answers as it is to try to identify the correct answer. And a lot of times, the choices, A, B, C, and D, will be just one word, technical terms. Well, if you don't learn the vocabulary, then you have no idea whether something is a wrong answer. So it's important to learn vocabulary for various reasons, but one reason on tests is to recognize that that has nothing to do with the question and therefore must be wrong. Narrows down your choices. Anyway, those are the lecture exams. And it's good that I call them lecture exams rather than just examinations, because every bit of the information treated by the lecture exams comes directly from my lectures. Now, it might be information you can find in a textbook. It might be information that I repeat in lab as well, just by coincidence. But every one of my questions that I write for my lecture exams comes directly from what I tell you in my lecture recordings. And therefore, don't think of the e-text, which you get access to via Connect, don't think of that as the primary way to study for my exams. It is not. The major reason, the main reason you should be using the e-text on Connect is simply to maximize your chances of getting the right answers on the Connect homework. Because those Connect assignments are not my questions. Those are publisher questions tailored specifically for the e-text you get access to when you register in Connect. And therefore, if you're in the course of taking a Connect homework, when you are completing it, if there's any question that you're not absolutely sure of, you should take a couple extra minutes to do a quick e-text search for keywords in that question, because that will take you exactly to the part of the e-text that has the answer in it. That takes a little bit more time than just breezing through the homework right before midnight. Don't do that. Give yourself time to hopefully get 100% on every one of these Connect homeworks, because that can go a long way toward rescuing your score that is going to go down because of the lecture examinations. But everyone on here?
No.
Sorry. But although the e-text is very useful for that, and although the e-text, of course, does discuss things that I'll discuss in here, don't think of it as the main way of studying for my exams. The main way of studying for my exams is to master the material that's in the recordings. I make a live recording every time I address the course. So those are available on the Hoffman site via a link that's called Current Term Lecture Recordings, I think. But the link above that, online lectures and slideshows, is actually even more valuable. Even though it comes from a previous term, still the same information. I say things a little bit differently each time. But this is really your main source of preparing for, the main resource for preparing for the lecture exams. And specifically, the SSS column. These synchronized slideshows are the easiest to use because the lecture and the slideshow are synchronized. Therefore, if you want to skip it to a specific place, the audio and the slide will be synchronized already. You could individually listen to just the audio or look at just the PowerPoint and so on. All the options are there. But these synchronized slideshows have all of the answers to every one of my tests because I write those questions directly based on what I say. Another way of saying that is that if I don't mention something in one of my recordings, then I can promise you it's not going to be on one of my tests. Whereas if you're reading a textbook, whether it's the e-text that you get or any textbook that you choose in biology, there will be plenty of things in that textbook that I don't mention. And therefore, if you're reading that as a way to prepare for a lecture exam, you're entirely wasting that time, which is valuable. This is the stuff you want to learn for the lecture exams. And that's the most important thing for your final grade. Now, that takes a hell of a lot of time. First of all, you endure the live performance, which takes 75 minutes every time. That's not nearly enough. Listening to them at home takes even longer, and you shouldn't do it just once. And this is just for the lecture recordings. That's not the only thing you're doing in the course. But the reason it takes longer is that you shouldn't just listen to it passively. The whole idea of the recordings is that you should use them to refine the notes that you made during the live performance, make them much better notes by repeated listening, which includes pausing me so that you can write those things out and then resuming. That takes longer than 75 minutes. Okay? And hopefully you're getting the idea that it would be maybe even mathematically impossible, but mentally impossible to do all of that in one night before an exam. This is not a crammable course. You're going to have to budget time so that you can listen to these things throughout the week and make your notes better and better. There's only so much you can write down in notes while I'm lecturing at the moment. But make better and better notes by listening to the recordings, and then master those notes to the point that you can explain out loud with just a fake lecture on your own. It doesn't have to be to a person. You can be alone in a room. But actually speaking out loud to explain major concepts without looking at any of your notes. You're not going to be able to do that at first. But realizing that you can't do that is actually a valuable exercise. You might be able to explain something, and then you get hung up. If you get hung up somewhere, that tells you exactly the thing that you need to study again. Don't keep studying the things that you can breeze through explaining without notes. Focus on the things that you can't until you can. If you're not able to explain these things out loud, then you're not ready for the lecture exam. So bother to give that a try. It's really helpful. And also, speaking it puts it in a different part of your brain. It gives another copy of that information, just like writing it does, hearing it does. Those all go into different parts of the memory. The more copies you have of the information, the greater the likelihood that you'll be able to retrieve one of those copies to answer the question on the exam. You're not going to be able to look at anything on the exam other than the question. So don't read a textbook and convince yourself that you understand this stuff. Of course you understand it. You're reading it. You don't get to read things during the exam. It has to come from your memory. So test yourself by giving your own lectures. All right. That's that category of points. Yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned before the labs. How many times a day do you have to knit for us to be working on?
Well, it kind of depends. I mean, there can be some drastic circumstances that are legitimate. So there's no real hard and fast rule. Ideally, you miss no labs. Depending on the, you know, if you're hospitalized or something, I can understand that. If you miss two labs, though, I'm technically not supposed to allow you to get through because labs are not things that you can make up. Unless there's another section you can attend, which is a possibility. But just avoid headaches by not missing any labs to begin with. And if you have to, then talk to me soon as possible. That's lecture exams. We went through the lab stuff. The Connect homework I already talked about. There's 12 of those, which is a full 10% of your grade. And like I said, those can all be very close to, if not 100%, if you do them. If you give yourself enough time to actually look up the answers to make sure they're right. You get multiple attempts, only the best of which counts. So if you don't get 100 right away, I think it'll tell you if you get 100. The Connect assignments will not tell you which questions are right or wrong, though, right away. You'll only be able to see that after the due date. Or after you've scored 100%, you'll know, of course. But bother to do it more than once since you're allowed, unless there's no way you have time to. Bother to do it because you want to maximize those comparatively easy points. Oh, that's it. The exams, that's the only thing besides attendance that you're earning in here, in this room. All the rest of it is either connect or laboratory related. But it's all one grade. You understand that, right? It's two section numbers, but you only get one grade. It's combined grade. And speaking of grades, the grading scale is slightly modified. Almost every other instructor, if not every other instructor in biology, uses 90, 80, 70 that you're probably familiar with. I've lowered the floor. And that's because I give a little bit more information than most instructors. It's a little tougher to score well on my exams. And I recognize that, so I make it a little bit easier to get the A, B, and C, and then therefore I end up having the same number of A's, B's, and C's as other instructors do. Just don't make the mistake of thinking that it's going to be easy to get an 86. The majority of the class, once we're halfway through the term, will be hoping they can get a 66. And the lecture exams, by the way, they usually average in the 50s. Like the first one, which is the easiest one, usually about 58%. Then it goes down from there. So be prepared for that. Hopefully avoid it as a class. Maybe you're an exceptional class, but that's what the mean is for all the times I've taught it. It usually then goes up slightly after the third one, and that's not because they get easier. I think it's because by then, the students that were bringing the average down have withdrawn, and that leaves only the people that are doing better. The point is, if the first one seems hard, then you need to make an adjustment immediately, because it gets harder from there, and it's relentless. It doesn't let up for the rest of the term. Okay, so just believe me. I think a lot of people don't actually understand. I mean, don't want to believe what I'm saying. They think I'm just trying to fool them into doing a lot of work. But it really is necessary to pass. Okay. Is there any other thing that all of this you should read? But I think that's what I wanted to say about it. What about things you care about at this point that I didn't mention? Go ahead. Yeah, I mentioned that.
Yeah, do we put our real email or the MEID?
Well, it doesn't matter to me. But since you mentioned that, if you ever need to ask me something about your grade, I'm not allowed to discuss that via email unless it's your Maricopa email. All right? So it's fine if you want to email me with whatever email you use, if it's not grade-related. But if it's anything to do with privacy issues, make sure you use your Maricopa address. As far as the rules consent form, though, anything that you want to use. The only reason you get that, you have to enter that, is so that you'll get a receipt saying you put it in. You can save that receipt. Anything else? Did you have a question?
I just want to ask you for the test. There's no way to, like, make them up right
now. Oh, well, no, there is a way to make them up. In fact, I have a verbose section devoted to that. My absolutely rigid policy on missing lecture examinations. Yes, they can be made up if you miss a lecture exam. You'll get a zero, but it won't be a permanent zero. However, you will not be allowed to take that multiple choice version when you make it up. And most people get kind of freaked out by that. Most people, I think, would prefer to take the multiple choice version. I'm not saying that the makeup versions are harder. If you know your stuff, it doesn't matter what format the test is. But there won't be any multiple choice questions on the makeup version. It'll be all short answer essay. And don't let that happen if you can help it. First of all, be here on test days. If it does happen, though, I will give you the rest of the term to take that makeup, the rest of the regular term, not into finals week. But you don't have to take it immediately. You can if you want, but prepare for it. And If that happens, we'll talk about it individually if it does, but try to avoid that happening. Does that answer that?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Are there any practice lectures exams that we can take or
no? There aren't any practice lecture exams, no. That is one thing about the first test, is that most of you have never had me for an instructor before, so you really have no idea what the test is going to be like until you get to test one. But, well, I don't know that I have anything to say after but. No is the answer. It is the easiest one, though. It's usually the highest score for most people. And once you get through the first one, you'll get used to my style of writing on questions, and they'll all be pretty much the same except for the topic. Anything else? All right, well, we can go to biology then.